This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor.
On call every Saturday afternoon at 5.
This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Today, our topic is timely and extremely important: violence prevention in children and young adults. Exposure to violence in the form of family conflict, bullying, gun violence can have long-lasting effects on the child that impact behavior and long-term health, putting these children at higher risk for school failure, drug abuse, delinquency, and violent behavior. Joining us today is a very special guest who has devoted his entire professional career to youth violence prevention, Dr. Stephen Leff, the William H. Bennett Professor of Pediatrics. He's a child psychologist and co-director of the Center for Violence Prevention at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks so much. I'm really excited to talk with you today.
Oh, my goodness. And before I begin, I just want to thank your team for helping us connect, because Joey McCool is so wonderful, Joey McCool Ryan, and Lindsay Mitros must be your right-hand man in terms of putting the website is so well-written. And I want to start by sharing with our listeners, to get more information or to read about the Center for Violence Prevention, can be found at violence.chop.edu. And we'll repeat that through the show. So, Steve, let's start. What is the Center for Violence Prevention at Children's Hospital, and what makes it unique?
Absolutely. So our center, really the goal is to reduce exposure to and impact of violence to youth and families. And we really try to do that by conducting community-focused research and design innovative evidence-based programs that we can run and sustain across clinical, school, and neighborhood settings. We started the center after the Connecticut school shootings after 2012.
Oh.
And after that horrific event, our CEO at the time wanted to think about how could we take two or three really strong programs that we were running, but to take all the programs around violence prevention across the CHOP enterprise and to integrate those, which we've now done, into six pillars, which I'll mention in just a moment. But our mission of our center is to build a model that serves the need of local patients and families that can eventually be replicated and scaled across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then our cores, our bullying prevention cores, we've spent over 20 years partnering with the School District of Philadelphia to really improve class climate through helping to reduce aggression among youth, promoting social-emotional learning, and really trying to promote healthy student-teacher relationships.
Well, I know you're going to explain this clearly as well, but I just wanted to rewind for a minute and just review two terms that you use so listeners understand. Community focus means you don't just set up a program and say, okay, here's the meal, you know,
yep.
go ahead and eat it. You take a whole menu that you put together as you work with the community, because they know the turf in there, and every school is different, I'm sure. You work in schools and neighbors. And the other quick thing is your goals include, you can't control everything in everyone's home, but you're trying to help a young person, a child, an adolescent who's been exposed to violence. You want to intervene and help them mitigate their own violent reaction. I guess that's overly simplified, but you work with parents as well and try to learn more about them. And I'm just trying to let you
absolutely
after that. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things that we really believe in is that we have to engage our community. And we have to do it in a way that we listen, we hear what the needs are, we take evidence-based, you know, programming, but we partner, if it's in the schools, with teachers, with students, with principals. If it's in the hospitals, it's with nurses, with doctors, but also with our patients, because it's really important that we're taking really strong programming, but we're doing it in a way that we're partnering to make sure that we're meeting the needs. And the other piece I think about our center that's so important is that we're always collecting data. And the reason that we collect data and do research, it's not just to do research alone. It's to make sure that it's working. It's to give that information back to the community to say, this is what's working. And if it's not working, what else can we do to help you to ensure that it's going to be meaningful?
So you're letting it evolve, really. You're saying,
absolutely,
this is how we're going to start. This is what we learned. So for, again, not everybody out there listening understands evidence-based. I mean, they can guess, but you take what you learn and you evolve and you change as you go to continue to make it better.
Yeah, absolutely. And by evidence-based, it's like, what is best practice? What has been shown to work? And yet we know that every community, every program, every clinic is different. So we also have to listen to make sure that, you know, a best practice program is really tailored and personalized to the patients and folks that we're working with and trying to support.
So that's one of the big things that separates your program apart from others. And you have this national reputation. And if, as you say, if you can set up a template based on all those layers, it's going to help everybody to adapt to their city or their area. So how can a healthcare institution affect change in violence prevention?
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, and I think that that's really a great question. I mean, I think that when we think about sort of healthcare institutions, we're thinking about, you know, how we can not only support children in being healthy, but how can we make them healthy adults? What can we do to really equip them early to learn prevention strategies, to understand, you know, how they can get along better with others so that as they get older, if they are exposed, you know, to guns, if they're exposed to serious conflicts, they already have some of the tools they need to be successful, to de-escalate, so that they're not, you know, playing into a conflict, you know, and reacting.
Yeah. And you said that, you said that so well. And we talk, obviously, gun violence would be terrifying for anyone, but especially a child, but even lesser. We've all grown up and our parents argue once in a while, but you're talking about, so a child can have an impact on his or her outlook on life or the way they react in the schoolyard when somebody bumps into them accidentally, that kind of thing. You're working on trying to help them control their reaction, not overreact. But if you're around arguing or violence all the time, even if you're not physically abused, it's going to shape your mantra. And that's where you are trying as clinicians to find children that need help and intervene and mitigate. Yes?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that what's really important here is it's really, you know, sometimes we look at a kid and think about, gosh, this is an aggressive kid. And we don't think about it that way. we think about what's a situation that this child has been in, what have they been exposed to? And what we found from our school-based programs, we have one called Friend to Friend, for example, that's in the schools. And one of the things that we found is that when we start to support girls, boys who have been previously aggressive, we actually have them come back to the classroom after they've learned some of these problem-solving steps and ways of de-escalating, and have them teach their classmates. And the reason that that's so impactful is that these same kids who are socially influential in sometimes a negative way, they have the potential and the resilience to be leaders. And if we tap into that, we find that these kids shine. They love the positive attention, and they're really good at being leaders. And so the trick is, you know, how do we engage with them? How do we, you know, teach them, you know, strategies to de-escalate, to say, you know what, maybe that wasn't on purpose, and I have choices. And, you know, maybe if I make this choice, you know, the consequences will be a little bit better.
So you're really teaching them to be leaders so they can go back, have that positive influence on their classmates or their siblings. And as we had a great conversation the other day, you're trying to shape their soft skills.
Yep. Yep.
It's exactly. So important. And parents too, you know, we know kids are exposed to all kinds of unhealthy videos and TV shows and that sort of thing. And on social media, violence in TV, as you say, that's a great opportunity for parents. That's a teaching moment to say, you know, it might look cool that you're watching a movie and somebody pops somebody on the head. That's not funny. It right. hurts the person. It hurts the victim. And it could change his or her life forever and their family and all that goes with it.
We have to humanize that.
Yes.
Right? Because I think that what happens is that, you know, when we watch, I don't think it's the violence, you know, itself, watching it, that's so harmful. I think it's kids don't have anything to interpret that with and right. to think about it, to say, yeah, that really hurt. And we often, in all of our programs, whether it's in the hospital, whether it's in primary care, whether it's in the schools, we're often thinking about how would that make you feel if you were in that situation, if you were in those shoes? Because we know that if we slow kids down and we have them think about the impact of their actions, that really can go a long way to humanizing things, to making them feel that, you know what, maybe that's not the best way of responding, because that really does hurt or harm somebody else.
Steve, I listen, and this just flows from you, and I know you have a very handsome son that helped set up our our connection today.
It's true.
What inspires you to do this work?
Gosh. Well, you know, it's thinking about some of the kids we've worked with in the schools. You know, I think that, you know, thinking of one young woman in particular, who was a fourth grader when we met her. And, you know, she was thought of as being a real problem. She was getting into conflicts a lot. She was what we call, she was using relational aggression, gossiping, leaving others out, impacting others' relationships. And, you know, when we did our program with her, you know, not only did she flourish when she came back into the classroom and taught her classmates what she'd been learning, but several years later, when we saw her, she still remembered the importance of staying calm, of looking at situations. And she came up to our team and she said, I still remember the skills. I still remember how to do this. And I thought, wow, you know, it's been 3 years and we made an impact that we, even as researchers, we can't measure.
Yeah, that's the gift for you. And as we say on the show repeatedly, there is no such thing as true altruism. You help somebody, you feel better. And really, you're the first program in the country to go into urban schools, reduce this relational aggression. And the other really great thing is you're bringing the voices of the community into the plan, and it makes it more acceptable. And if it's more acceptable, it's going to be implemented and accepted and move on. Let's take a little break. And when we come back, more from Dr. Steve Leff.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. So happy to welcome our guest, Dr. Steve Leff, from the Center for Violence Prevention at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Steve, we're learning so much about ways to identify the impact of exposure to violence in children and young adults. And your hope is to identify and then intervene and teach children to be leaders and learn how to react in a less violent way. And share that learning point with their siblings and their peers at school. Tell us, if you would, you have six pillars, six areas at the center. Can you tell us a little about each of them? And I know you spend a lot of your focus on the bullying prevention pillar.
Yeah. So I'll skip the bullying prevention because I know we're going to talk about that in a moment. Just to mention the other pillars, we have a community violence and trauma support pillar. And that's really, it's clinical and research programs that we have to promote physical and emotional health and safety for youth and families that are directly impacted by trauma and violence. So this is to help the kids that unfortunately are injured through assaults, through injuries that come into the emergency department. And this program provides assessment, emotional support, trauma-focused treatment, and system navigation. We also have another pillar, a Stop Intimate Partner Violence pillar. We have wonderful partners who do a lot of this work in the community that we work closely with, Lutheran Settlement House and Laurel House in particular. And working with them, we're promoting a universal assessment and, you know, allocating of resources by healthcare providers related to intimate partner violence and teen dating violence.
Steve, let me interrupt. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when I first saw that listed, I thought, is it intimate partner violence prevention? You want to keep children safe or adolescents when they start, you know, going to dances or dating or whatever, and teach them how to be careful and be safe. But I wonder, too, if you say you're talking about families, I wonder, does that involve talking to parents as well and saying, listen, if you're going to have a disagreement, try to take it outside. Try to remember that your child is really, really terrified. Does it affect both the parents and the teens as they begin to date?
Okay. Absolutely. In fact, I think it's really to help if a parent feels that, you know, they are in a bad situation with their partner. It's providing a safe way that they can get support. And we have on-care specialists.
Beautiful.
That really help.
Good.
We also have our gun safety pillar. We know they're, guns are the leading cause of death right now among youth. And, you know, aside from removing guns from the home, the next best way to keep kids safe is to give out safety devices along with education. And so our Center for Violence Prevention Gun Safety Program encourages staff to have non-judgmental conversations with families about guns that are around the house and offers educational resources and gun locks.
I wanted to just emphasize, people hear that you give out gun locks. Awesome. Yep. Sorry, go ahead.
And then suicide prevention, that's a pillar. We work with the Department of Psychiatry at CHOP to strengthen our youth suicide prevention efforts, to increase access to mental health services, to use a behavioral health screen in the emergency department. And then finally, our last pillar is our professional development and training pillar. And these are training programs for professionals, because it's heavy lifting to do this work. It's stressful, and we really focus on trauma-informed care and how we can integrate that in everything that we do. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, at the violence@chop.edu, you know, is our website, and we have, you know, much more information and resources about those pillars.
Violence.chop.edu for more reading. We'll keep repeating that. So, Steve, we talked about bullying prevention, and I really think of all, that's probably one of the more common issues that children and adolescents face while through life, especially with access to social media. One comment goes out to hundreds, maybe thousands of people, and embarrasses, whether it's true or made up. It's horrible. And in one swoop, it can destroy a kid's whole outlook on life. So we talked about the school-based programming. I love that you take the confident kids and rechannel that energy into something positive. So they still feel respected. I'm cool. I'm going to get up and teach my friends here how I respond when somebody pushes me in the schoolyard. I'm going to say, you're not going to fluster me. Why does the Center for Violence Prevention, why does the center's bullying prevention program focus on elementary school age children? I think that's important for people to hear.
Yeah. I mean, we focus on late elementary school before the transition to middle school, or before sixth grade typically. And the reason we do that is we know that, you know, those are times when reputations are becoming entrenched, where conflicts are very common, and, you know, where if kids can recognize how they can slow themselves down and not be reactive, we can avoid a lot of conflicts. Those 2 or 3 seconds, if a kid can say, wow, I can take a step back and not react just that long, that can change the outlook for many of the kids who get involved at later in life. And so we start early so that they have the skill set for making tough decisions as they get older, because those decisions come quickly, and they need to really be confident in their skills so that they don't get involved in challenging situations.
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that these exposures change how the brain develops, and that's the long-lasting impact that sets them up for failure in almost every part of their lives, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that we know that trauma and violence has an impact on the brain, has an impact on the body, and can have a long-lasting impact. At the same time, you know, we do trauma-informed care training. Everything we do is really trying to recognize how do we, in a safe way, work with kids, with families in the hospital, with youth and teachers in the schools, to take approaches that are non-judgmental, non-blaming, and that also recognize that many of our kids have had challenging pasts. So we need to build those relationships slowly. We need to give them opportunities to succeed. And we need to keep our eyes open for the times when they really have the possibility of excelling.
I love that. Give them opportunities to succeed. So you implant, that's the beauty of working in the schools or with the teachers. Because if you say, a lot of times the schoolyard or it's unsupervised playtime where conflicts occur. And if you say, hey, 10 fourth graders, let's play this game. If you keep them a little more structured, I mean, free time is important too, but not unsupervised, not in today's world when kids might have a phone in their pocket and they say, look at this, and it's not good. Wouldn't you say that's a lot of it too? That's a great way to intervene.
Absolutely. Some of the early research we did actually was on the playgrounds during recess. And what we found is that, not surprisingly, when kids have activities, when adults are engaging kids, we found the level of aggression and violence goes way down. And kids from different backgrounds start playing together and interacting more. And so I think we as adults, you know, engaging kids, and keeping them active and interested when they're in elementary school, that goes a long, long way.
Well, I guess that's the beauty of sports too. Not that you are the best, highest scorer, so you get a scholarship to college. But when you play as a team of five or six or nine, whatever the sport, your common goal or your common enemy is the other team. And you work together because you want to win or you want to play well. And you want to show your family who's watching you or your other friends, hey, I'm pretty good at soccer or whatever, basketball. So what are the warning signs that parents and caregivers, teachers look for in a child who's been a victim or a child who's been bullied?
So a lot of times, and there's no one telltale sign either, but the
No.
kinds of things for parents to look for are changes in eating and sleeping patterns, kids wanting to avoid school, complaints about recess and lunch,
Interesting.
not wanting, not wanting to go to lunch.
Oh.
Need to sit with the teacher, but also somatic complaints, headaches, stomach aches, and then sometimes, especially for victims, school avoidance. All of a sudden, they don't want to go to school anymore.
Oh.
And I think, one of the ways that we can really help parents around this is opening up conversation and communication with our kids, about their day, about their friends, what they're doing each day, because I think the more we're talking with our kids, we're going to hear lots of good things, but then when they have challenges, we'll already be talking, with them about it.
Well, something as simple as gossip can really throw any of any age into a tailspin. How do you handle that? I think, as you're saying, try to eat dinner as a family, even if it's something casual. Take the time to sit down with your child, look him or her in the eyes. How did today go? Who did, I remember when my children would look, who'd you play with? Nobody. What'd you do today? Nothing. But I'm driving to and from nursery, kindergarten, whatever, and I give another child a ride. Hey, did Johnny push you in the schoolyard today? Yeah, he pushed me too. And that's where you hear it. You have to ask them.
Yeah, and I think that I think that starting, we often say, when we work with parents, like, in our clinics, our outpatient clinics, starting a conversation time around dinner or in the evening, 5 minutes, but just where you're listening, just where you're talking, that's where you hear things, you're
Yes.
relaxing together. And we get a sense of, what's really going well that we can be proud of with our kids, and maybe what are the areas that we as parents need to teach them more empathy or perspective taking and things like that. So important.
And watch your own responses to something that's disappointing, like gossip, and say, well, you know what? I'm going to show them that I'm not catty or I'm not petty. Maybe they misunderstood. I'll give them a second chance.
Absolutely. Being a positive role model, especially around gossip and rumors, is really important. Kids watch us, and that's an area that
Yes.
can really make a difference.
Beautiful. Let's take a little break to hear about this week's world champion. And when we come back, more with Dr. Steve Leff from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
Now for your real champion. I call this segment Aesop's Fables. You can please everyone. In ancient Greece, there lived a man named Aesop who wrote over 700 fables, short stories which illustrate a particular moral and teach a lesson to children. The characters in his stories are animals with human traits. Born a slave in 1620 BCE, Aesop won his freedom by impressing his owner with his wit and wisdom. Now, we're all familiar with the most famous of Aesop's fables, including The Boy Who Cried Wolf, The Wolf in Sheep's Clothing, and The Fox and the Grapes. Well, today I'd like to share a retelling of The Man, the Boy, and the Donkey. A man and his son were going with their donkey to the market. As they walked along, a countryman passed them and said, "You fools, what good is it to have a donkey if you don't use it to ride?" So the man put the boy on the donkey, and they went on their way. But soon they passed a group of men, and one said, "See that lazy youngster? He lets his father walk while he rides." So the man ordered his boy to get off, and got on himself. But they hadn't gone far when they passed two women, one of whom said to the other, "Shame on that lazy lout, letting his poor little son trudge along." Well, now the man didn't know what to do, but at last he took his boy up on the donkey with him. And by this time, they came into town, and the passers-by began to jeer and point at them. The man stopped and asked what they were scoffing at, and the passers-by said, "Aren't you ashamed of yourself for overloading that poor donkey with yourself and your hulking son?" Then the man and boy got off the donkey and tried to think what to do. They thought and they thought, till at last they cut down a pole, tied the donkey's feet to it, and raised the pole and the donkey to their shoulders so he wouldn't have to walk. They went along amid the laughter of all who met them till they came to the market bridge, when the donkey, getting one of his feet loose, kicked out and caused the boy to drop his end of the pole. In the struggle, the donkey fell over the bridge, and because his 4 feet were still tied together, he drowned. "That'll teach you," said the old man who had followed them. "Try to please all, and you please no one." The moral of the story? You can't please everyone. If you try, you might end up pleasing no one, and actually shortchange yourself in the process. So don't walk away from common sense when somebody chooses to criticize you. Perhaps they don't know all the circumstances that led to your decision. And perhaps we can apply this fable to our discussion today. We're learning about the influences of bullying on children. Social media, texting, cell phone use have made it so much easier to bully and harass, and how it can make children feel pressured to dress, speak, and behave in a certain way just to fit in. So sit down with your children, adolescents, and teens. Find out what makes them happy and what issues at school or with friends might have them worried. And if you learn that your child is doing the bullying, ask him or her how they would feel if they were the target. And remember, not all bullies are bad kids. Sometimes they're being bullied and just want to deflect attention from themselves and want to fit in with a group of kids. Ask your child what happened, then give him or her space to explain what's going on and share their feelings. And remember, it also helps to look at what's going on at home. Treating each other with love and respect sets a good example for kids. Being a positive role model and a good listener, along with maintaining a constant loving dialogue with your child, will help him or her feel more secure in their own decisions and more likely to develop positive relationships with others. We salute you, Aesop, for giving us these fables. You're a real champion.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're learning so much about the Center for Violence Prevention at Children's Hospital with so many pillars. Steve Leff, you are a superstar helping so many people, probably so many more people than you realize. Because when you help a child handle their experience or exposure to violence and help to shape them as a growing adolescent and adult, you're helping so many people in their wake, in the present and the future.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's the essence of our center. You know, how do we intervene at the right time and the right place at the right time of life? And, you know, because we know that different transition points for kids as they get older, that's when they have problems. And so early prevention and then thinking about how we can have programming and research, evidence-based programs, best practice programs that, again, take into account the community voice to make sure that we're doing it right to best meet the needs.
Well, I remember years ago, I'm not a child psychologist, I'm just a mother and a grandmother, but I remember a commercial on TV and it just showed people's mouths. And they were saying things like, you're bad, you didn't do it right, you're stupid, or whatever. And if you hear that, even as an adult, after a while you start to say, gosh, if more than one person has that opinion of me, maybe they're right. It just infuses that person, especially a child, just learning who he or she is. It formulates their opinion of themselves as well. And they start to say, yeah, well, I guess I might as well stop trying because there's just no positive reinforcement. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think what you're talking about is so important. It's we as adults can be positive role models. I mean, we already know from research that the best way to prevent bullying, for example, is to have one best friend. Think about it. One
Love
friend.
It.
Just to get that support. And if you couple that with a supportive family, a teacher who's engaged, I mean, you know, that can help a kid beyond measure. And we see that in the School District of Philadelphia, how some of these fabulous teachers are engaging with kids and making a difference in the life of a child who's experienced trauma and loss. And, you know, they've had a lot of rough patches, and this caring teacher or counselor can make such a difference in their lives.
Yeah, exactly. It's their cushion. Somebody who embraces them and says, you know what, the sun will come up tomorrow.
That's
Steve,
right.
The other term that you use that I'm familiar with because we teach our medical students is trauma-informed care. Let's talk about that just for a minute, because I want to spend a good deal of time on the gun safety program.
Yeah.
So trauma-informed care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, first it's a recognition that there are certain words or actions that we can use, even well-meaning providers, that can set off, that can trigger. We talk about somebody who's experienced loss. It almost brings them back to the challenging time of what happened to them. And so we as providers need to really be, you know, thoughtful and careful when we're doing things. So we're approaching folks, you know, in a way that's engaging, but that also gives them the opportunity to talk or not talk about something, to move at their own pace, you know, and to really respect the fact that we all have different journeys in life and that some have been pretty hard.
Yeah. Well, I know with our medical students, we have what we call standardized patients, and people will come in and pretend to have belly pain, and we teach them what questions to ask, how to do a proper exam, that sort of thing. But we also say trauma-informed care for an adult means, well, the same thing. Let's say it's a woman, and in her history, she's been assaulted or trafficked or something awful. You're going to say, I'd like to examine your heart and lungs. Is it all right if I open your shirt a little bit to put my stethoscope on your skin? And chances are they're not going to say no, but you're sort of gradually working up to, I don't want to trigger any heartache that you've had in the past. So, and that's a way of gaining the person's trust and helping them and saying, I care about these things.
That's
so
right.
you're in a good place. So the gun safety program, so essential. Guns are accessible, et cetera. And tell us, if you would, what does the program that you offer, how does it address gun violence and what does it offer?
Absolutely. So the first thing I want to say is that all of our programs, and actually everything we've talked about, contributes to the prevention of gun violence, right? So the early prevention,
True.
Conflict management, meeting parents where they're at, you know, is so important. And so CHOP's Gun Safety Program provides firearm safety counseling combined with safe storage devices that really help to improve safe practices in the home. And there's several different pieces. So one of the, there's a campaign that, you know, the CHOP is part of. It's called the Doesn't Kill to Ask campaign. And that's the idea that we, you know, as psychologists, as pediatricians, as parents, that we need to make asking about guns a part of normal conversation, just like we ask about pets and friends. I mean, you know, and even if it's to say for a parent who's having their child go to another parent's house and they're not sure, you
Good
know,
point.
Mm-hmm. of, you know, do they have guns and are they locked up? Then, you know, to say, you know, my pediatrician recently suggested that I ask this question. I thought, wow, that was interesting.
Clever. Blame it on somebody else. That's what I tell my kids. Say, well, my mother said I can't do it.
That's right. But I mean, the idea of like, or, you know, and this actually happened to me years ago with my oldest child, where there was a play date and the other parent, who I didn't know very well, said, you know, I want to ask you a question. I hope it doesn't offend you, but do you have any guns in the home? And I said, no, it doesn't offend me. It's a great question. I want to start asking that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that it's just, you know, we know it, we don't want to make it political. Guns are out there. And, you know, we're, you know, aside from gun legislation, which is a whole different issue, we want to meet parents where they're at. And where they're at is there are a lot of guns out there. So, you know, if we can, in a non-judgmental way, our providers, you know, provide education that unlocked guns really can lead to a lot of accidental violence.
And well, that's a, you know, all you need is to hear one story of a child who accidentally shot himself or herself or a sibling or a friend. And how does the person who survives that situation ever live with that forever? And the loss of the child and all those things. And as you say, guns can be a polarizing issue.
Yep.
But I know that you and your staff ensure that the conversations are framed around safety, not politics. Yep. Meet the parents where they are. And that's...
Yeah.
That's your goal, or else they're not going to cooperate and they're going to walk away. And
right? Yeah. And I mean, the gun safety program, just to say a little bit more about that, you know, is really about giving education and safely distributing gun safety devices, which we do in the emergency department. We're doing in three of our primary care practices. And, you know, it's really, you know, us providing you know, caregivers with gun safety education about what is best practice, because, you know, I think everyone agrees we want to keep our kids safe.
Yeah.
If our kids are safer when the gun's locked and the ammunition is stored separately, then, you know, we all win. And so
yes.
I think really, you know, thinking about, and we have lots of, you know, events and giving free gun safety devices, and it's important that, you know, we keep our kids safe and that they feel safe.
Yeah. And I guess it's important for the adults to know where the gun is, not casually mention it in front of the children, keep it locked up. And, you know, you mentioned that it has become part of the routine. Do you have pets? Is that why your child is sniffling all the time or whatever it is? Do you have guns in the home? We're offering this program. We're offering Lux. I know as when we interview adult patients, we routinely now say, do you feel safe in your home? Do you feel safe in your environment?
Yep. So exactly.
Why not? If you catch one in 100, you may have saved a life or turned a life around. So I think that's awesome that you're doing that. So let's talk about how parents talking to their children about firearms in their homes, and how do parents listen and talk to their children? Especially, like you say, if you are playing at your friend's house, tell us if you notice. That's, I guess, part B of the question.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think part of it goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago. It's as parents, it's opening lines of communications with our kids, just generally, so that we're having daily conversations about positive things, about, you know, what was your day like? Tell me something great that happened today. You know, did anything happen that you're concerned about today? And then I think that over time, it's also talking about, you know, what makes people feel safe and unsafe, right? So, you know, because we need to give our kids messages that if you see a gun, don't pick it up. tell an adult. And, you know, that it's really important that the kids understand, you know, that unlocked guns, you know, are things to stay away from. And that, you know, if they have, as they get older, you know, that they choose their friends as best they can. They make good decisions. But that as parents, we want them to be talking to us no matter what. Because what happens, whether it's cyberbullying, whether it's, you know, gun safety, whether it's teen dating violence, often victims feel like they're alone, and they're not alone. The more they talk up, the more we as adults can really support them.
And I would imagine they feel alone because they think it happened because through their own fault. Let's say, you know, we did a show a few weeks ago, really a superb show, thanks to the guests, not myself, but about HPV. And you think, okay, it started out, oh, this could bump the risk of cervical cancer. Guess what? It bumps the risk of 6 cancers, oral, anal, all these different areas. And part of in the show, we're learning that pretty active sex lives in 12-year-olds. So the pressure, whether it's that, whether it's, hey, I know my dad keeps his gun, I want to show off, whatever it is, the pressure on these young children and adolescents is exploding because information is exploding. And we're going to talk with one of your colleagues, you know, soon about cell phone use, texting, social media. What tools do we give a child to say, no, thanks, I don't want to see the gun, I don't want to play, you know, Hollywood, you know, I don't want to play that game. How do we infuse the confidence in them? How do we teach them to say no?
Yeah, it's to humanize it. It's about empathy and perspective taking. It goes such a long way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And just give them, as you say, teach them to channel that energy and make it take the negative that has been infused into them, not always their own fault. And even then you add the layer of children that have to deal with ADHD, that they're not, that doesn't mean they're going to be violent because of their condition. It means that they might have a little more trouble controlling an impulse. And that's what you're helping them with.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Beautiful. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, our wrap up with Dr. Steve Leff from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
And welcome back to our final segment of Your Radio Doctor. We call this segment Your Weekly Prescription. And it's a great time to give a wrap up with our guest, Dr. Steve Leff from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where he is a professor and a child psychologist and the co-director of the Center for Violence Prevention. Steve, let's talk a little bit about the main takeaway points, including the 6 pillars of the Center for Violence Prevention.
Absolutely. And so I want to also make the point that violence@chop.edu, where you can go. We have a wonderful website. We have resources and a lot of information about our programs and our research. Just to recap, we have 6 pillars, 6, you know, really, and we have unbelievable leaders of each pillars who work, you know, in partnership with the hospital and with the community. But we have a bullying prevention pillar. We have a community violence and trauma support pillar. We have a stop intimate partner violence pillar. We have a gun safety pillar, and I spoke about that just a few minutes ago. We have a suicide prevention pillar. And then finally, we have a professional development and training pillar. Those are our 6 pillars in our center.
You know, Steve, when you can carve out the time, I would love to have you come back and talk about suicide prevention, because I think that one of the things I notice, again, I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist, one of the things I notice about people in general is people are becoming a bit more robotic. If you think about all the electronic choices you make in a day, I have to open this email, I'm going to discard that without reading it, click, click, click all day. And then we're asked to fill out, say, a form, an important form. Do we become a little robotic about that? Do we become robotic about choices that should weigh more heavily? And suicide, if it's in the media a lot, is it easier for children or adults or people of any age to think it's a choice on the menu? You know, and I think that would be a good topic for us to.
Yeah, I mean, I think of a comedian that I really liked, Robin Williams, you know, who committed suicide. And, you know, and I think that when something like that happens, it can popularize it. We don't want to do that. I mean, and I think that I think that what happens is that, you know, when there's, you know, a lot of attention paid to these things, it can then look like an option to a child. And what we need to be doing is talking to our kids that there's so much to do in life. There's so many opportunities. There's so many chances to be a leader, to find a niche, right? To find something you're good at, whether it's sports, an instrument, whether, you know, it's acting. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. We think it's so important to find one good thing, you know, something that the kid can feel good about and excel in. And so I think that I take the flip side of that is to really look for the positives and really engage with our kids.
And you do that so well on so many layers of things we discussed today. You go into the community and you make them feel special by saying, how can we work together? You're out there. I'm not just going to come up with a plan and say, do this. I need your input. And the other beautiful thing that makes you stand apart and your national stars is your research and collecting data. And, you know, in TechnoTalk, we say, here's an app for your program. You're apping all the time. You're improving because you collect data, learn from it, and continue to evolve, just like life evolves. And that you actually are so careful about trauma-informed care. When you approach children, their families, you're doing it in such a way to say, I wasn't there, but I can imagine how painful this was. And you're very careful with the wording you use. All of those levels are professional, but just human.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's humanizing this. It's really recognizing that we can engage, we can have an impact on others, and really understanding too that many folks have been through tough times. We have to recognize and respect that in order to really engage and be most helpful.
It's beautiful, and the way you talk about it, it's clear that you've spent your whole life thinking about it and making it happen and improving it and improving the lives of children as they grow and their families. And I hope people will visit your website. How can people learn more about the program, the several programs in the Center for Violence Prevention?
That's right. Check out our Center for Violence Prevention at violence@shop.edu. And lots of information, lots of resources, tip sheets, and things like that. But this has been a lot of fun, and really appreciate the attention that you're bringing to this important area.
Oh, listen, you can be a fantastic parent. You can be the ideal grandparent, and children are exposed to a lot of stuff out there. We have to help them find shields to protect them and find avenues. As you say, if you're disappointed because you didn't get picked for the school play, you know, try some other club and make the lemonade. Dr. Steve Leff from Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, what a pleasure. We've learned so much. Thank you. I hope you'll join us again.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday afternoon at 5 here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen to all of our shows and champions on audacy.com. That's AUDACY.com. A special thank you to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross, and we appreciate our association with Helio.com. the medical information platform that offers the latest in healthcare news and information. Visit Helio.com. Read an article from just this week on June 17th called "The Surgeon General Calls for Social Media Warning Labels." We would love to hear from you. Send an email to info@yourradiodoctor.net. Tell us about a topic you'd like us to cover or a champion in your family or community. That's info@yourradiodoctor.net. Please follow us and like us on social media. We're so happy to be growing our list of followers. Remember to pray for peace in our world, peace in our beloved country, in our families, and in each of our own hearts. This is Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love, and always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit yourradiodoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.